Information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. Welcome, my friends, to episode 115 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and the show. It's another Friday the 13th. It's March 13th, 2009. 313, the Ides of March, and significant dates. Mass murder, media memes, shooter psyop sprees, biolabs, Lyme disease, cyber war, space war, Obama, NASA, and the New World Order. And we're going to be discussing it all with our good friend Clyde Lewis of the Ground Zero Lounge here for the entire 2 hours of episode 115 of MediaMonarchy.com.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Thank you.
That, my friends, is the fitting intro to this episode 115 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the second of three Friday the 13th in this year, 2009. It's March 13th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. Coming to you, as always, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and 1 p.m. Eastern Time, thanks to the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. And again, thanks to KBFR 93.9 in Boulder and Free Radio Olympia in Washington at 98.5. And additionally, I got to thank rockcreekfreepress.com. for getting in touch with me, and they've actually run my logo and the site in their paper. So thank you very much. And was recently contacted by Mr. Freeman Fly of FreemanTV.com and a host of other sites. So lots of good things coming up here on MediaMonarchy.com. Of course, FaceBase, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org, and all and on. And on. So, my friends, without further ado, we're chomping at the bit here. It's the triumphant return of our good friend Clyde Lewis of the Ground Zero Lounge. Thanks for coming on.
There we go. I think I got a little bit short board. Oh, there we go.
Oh, we do.
Okay, that works.
I was even about to say before we started, I was like, and we won't have a microphone problem like we did last time.
It's my electromagnetic current going through the microphone, I think that's what it is.
All right.
I'll hold it like this to make sure it works fine. So.
I apologize.
Oh, that's all right.
Well, and that's actually bringing up the fact that this is the last Media Monarchy broadcast from our soon-to-be old space for the Portland Radio Authority here on basically Southwest 5th in Washington in downtown Portland, Oregon. Moving to new digs next week. So next week's episode, I don't know how it's going to go. It's going to be a new space, so I'm always a little reticent. So I'll probably have a plan B planned for when I get into the studio next week if anything hinky goes awry. But we're talking about being in downtown Portland, Oregon.
Exactly.
So let's immediately launch into what we were talking about off mic.
Okay. I've been following the Operation Blackjack slideshow that's been in the London Telegraph. I stumbled onto this. I have a gentleman who writes to me, calls himself Howard Phillips Lovecraft. And Mr. Lovecraft sent me a message, and he said, "What is Blackjack?" He said, "Looks like Portland, Oregon's in the crosshairs of a nuclear attack." And I thought, what is he talking about? So I went and I checked out the London Telegraph, and what it is it's a series of slides that have been produced. They're pretty rudimentary, if you will. I know some people who do better Photoshop than...
I've seen it referred to even as a comic strip.
Yeah, well, there is a comic area. It's parts 4 and 5 now look comic-y.
Okay.
But, you know, it's funny because it's really poorly done Photoshop. In fact, I don't understand how something that poor can be put out and put on what they call the arts and culture list for the London Telegraph. But what's effective about it, and one of the things, you know, living in Portland, Oregon, and knowing that Portland's one of the targets for this group called the NAU, according to this slideshow, one of the things that's scary about it is they've done their homework, because on one of the websites that you're being led to, whether it's a viral marketing scam for some movie or some comic book is not important right now. What's important is that they've done their homework, because they have some coordinates that you can find on one of their websites where one of the bombs go off. And one of them is in New York, longitude and latitude of New York, and it's just west of Ground Zero, which is where the two towers have been brought down. And then you take a look at the other coordinates that are hidden. They're hidden on the website. You have to highlight them because they're in black. And you take a look at some of the coordinates, and one of the coordinates is Portland, Oregon. Now, I had gotten Google Maps out and Google Earth, and I had focused the longitude and latitude, and the area where the bomb goes off is anywhere between Southwest 3rd and Burnside to Northwest 3rd and Northwest Gleason near Highway 99W. So last night, before I ventured out, because I go out and meet up with my fiance. What had happened was I went out to that area. It's near the train station of the Pearl District, basically there, not quite. I mean, it's just right there. But it's near the Northwest Natural Building, and the scary part is it's in the motor pool area where all the white vans are parked. And in the slideshow, you see a white van with a Viper on it that says NAU that has the bomb on board. So it's pretty ingenious of them to park it in a motor pool where there are white vans everywhere. And I'm thinking, now, if this is a group from England that has put together this slideshow, somewhere they knew that there was a parking lot with white vans where they could easily hide a bomb. And that's what's really frightening about this, is I don't understand why authorities aren't being alerted to this, unless it's some sort of psyops or some sort of intelligence ploy to get people seated for what is called predictive programming. And what I mean by predictive programming, you should take a look at, I've just been talking about the food scares. We've had runs with our spinach and peppers and tomatoes, meat recalls, peanut butter. And then what happens is we start finding out that H.R. 857 is being produced in a house where they're going to ban organic farming. Now, sure, people are going to go, well, we don't want any more poisoned food. It's all a matter of this false flag predictive program seeding where they will scapegoat a number of instances where they say, well, why didn't we know about this? Why didn't we pay attention? It's kind of like before 9/11. There were so many movies and so many television shows. In fact, you use a clip in one of your montages from, what is it, that Last Kiss Goodnight? Is that the name of the movie?
Yeah, Sam, yeah. Samuel Jackson.
Yeah. And they talk about the World Trade Center being attacked and to hide some sort of a money that's going to Congress or something. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but Pilot, Dean Hagland, the guy that was one of the lone gunmen, had told me that it was odd that Pilot, the first lone gunman series, the spinoff from the X-Files, the plot was that someone was going to fly a plane. This is 6 months before 9/11, fly a plane into the World Trade Center. And so, you know, when Washington says, well, we had no idea they'd be using planes as weapons, that's not true. They knew. We had television shows and, I mean, Super Mario Brothers.
We even had the...
even. it is actually in Super Mario Brothers. The World Trade Center is attacked and it's destroyed.
And it has a smoking evil face burned into it.
Yes, exactly.
But we had... now my thoughts swirl around. The X-Files and the plot in there where we have, it's remote control.
Yeah, it's remote control planes flown in. Yeah,
and these things play out.
Yes,
and
exactly.
We had the Genoa, there was a G7, one of the big wigs, the elitists, the banksters of the world all got together in Italy. And this was, I believe, in 2000 or early 2001.
Right.
They had anti-aircraft missile batteries set up for expressly the fear of planes crashing into the site.
Exactly. And you were talking about how The Onion recently did a thing about games that Grisham has come up with. John Grisham has these games that are out, like Ghost Recon and all these other games. Did you know that they did predict the future?
Mm-hmm.
Most of them did, especially the situation in Ossetia with Georgia.
Almost to the dates.
To the dates, yes. It was amazing. And so we start seeing, and people saying, oh, don't get all worked up about this, Clyde. It's just a fictitious slideshow. Well, it's kind of creepy because the slideshow, the bombing takes place on June 22nd, June 21st, which is the day of the summer solstice. They're using all kinds of imagery that is, I guess you could say, Illuminati imagery, from sunbursts to vipers to Saturn to you name it.
So in Blackjack,
yes,
the date in Portland is the upcoming June 21st, 2009?
Yes. And it's a Monday when I do the Ground Zero Lounge. It's that day. And that's what really creeped me out, was that the coordinates, like I said, are between Southwest 3rd and Burnside and Northwest 3rd and Northwest Gleason, which is about a block radius where that bomb goes off. And so I could say the bomb goes off 3 blocks north of Ground Zero in Portland, and about 3 or 4 blocks west of Ground Zero in New York City. Because there's like 6 cities that go up. There's New York City, Mexico City, Toronto, Los Angeles, and Portland, Oregon's one of the cities that's targeted too.
And again, what we were saying off mic just before the show is that I believe you and I and many other people, that's what makes us really nervous, is when we see cities that have been the focus of a lot of previous drilling and terror drills and war games.
False flag drills.
As Portland has to the hilt.
Exactly.
If you recall the Top All 4 event,
the
where
top
there
all
was
four.
The bomb scare within the drill that wasn't part of the drill.
Yeah, and they announced on this, there was a bomb that was supposed to go off of the bridge there near the Burnside Bridge, which is exactly where this bomb in the Blackjack, I mean, we're what, 2 blocks away from the Burnside Bridge, if you're talking about 99W and Gleason, and you're not far from that. Not only that, but not only top up, but we had black helicopters flying over the city
last August.
Last August, we had we now have naval maneuvers going on off the coast. And another thing that's creepy is that I've been getting emails from people saying that they're seeing a lot of troop movement in places like Beaverton and also Highway 26.
So the troop movement recently in Beaverton, Oregon, is something I only posted a link to on the site because it was something that I didn't. There wasn't enough there for me to kind of go on. Do you want to discuss that?
I got okay. What had happened is I got a text on my phone. Hi, troop movement going on, Highway 26, tanks blocking the road. I thought, okay, get out over there, give me some. I said, get pictures. I always say, get pictures. I had a producer of mine, her name was Delana, who was with IdeoCast, and she was actually on the road, and I'd say, if you see troop movement, get out your cell phone, start snapping shots. She snapped some shots of one of those Land C tanks that were traveling on I-5 coming out of Washington. And she had a whole caravan of them coming to Portland, Oregon. And then I didn't get pictures of the troop movement going on recently. It was a couple days ago. But there were a number of people who, when I sent out the email, I had a friend of mine named Richard, who's a cab driver, and he sent me some information saying, yeah, they were loading tanks onto trains. And so, you know, troop movement is normal when you're whether it's National Guard or whatever, but somebody had posted in Portland in the media saying that they asked the soldiers what was going on. He says, we're here to deploy and then to break up and move on to another area. So what they were doing is they were doing urban movements. They were doing urban warfare drills and doing them in Beaverton, of all places. So I'm thinking to myself, why is it that Portland, Oregon is becoming this, I guess you could say, petri dish for military activity? I mean, we were just talking this morning. There's actually a precinct, a police precinct truck, parked outside the studios of the Portland Radio Authority this morning.
Right now,
right
across
now.
Basically diagonal across the block.
Right, and it is a full-on police precinct that's set up right in downtown. And I guess you could say we are less than a mile away from the Blackjack Ground Zero,
mm-hmm.
sitting here in these studios. So when you have police setups and troop movements and black helicopters, all these things going, and then you have some sort of viral marketing or what I say guerrilla fear-mongering thing that's going on at the Telegraph in the U.K.
From the U.K.,
and,
no less.
And not only that, but Obama was briefed by the CIA no more than 3 weeks ago that the United States would become targets of Islamist extremists from Britain. They're all organized in Britain right now, and according to the CIA briefing that Obama got, that they are they're heading here. So what does Obama do? He's meeting with the Queen over mm-hmm. what? We don't know. The Queen is always called in. He's meeting with the Queen now. He's had some very discouraging remarks that he's given about England. However, he's still going to meet with the Queen, and England is, you know, open arms to the new Obama Messiah, but then he says bad things about them. Now they're going, we don't know whether or not we like this
mm-hmm.
guy. So what are we doing? We're tainting the waters now with Britain. We've got Islam, and
we just had Gordon Brown,
New World Order.
Stopped by to,
yes.
Yeah, of course, never missing an opportunity.
Please
to say
us that
New
we
World
need a
Order.
New World Order. Keep saying that, Gordon
he
Brown.
He was here, and yes. I just sort of quipped on the site that, you know, he was sent here to, you know, check on the old colony, make sure,
sure.
everything's going all right.
I know, and what's really creepy is that the Telegraph will not take this down, nor will they report this is some sort of they won't tell the people what's really happening, and I'm wondering if they're getting paid off for either this viral marketing, because there's a lot of viral marketing going on. In fact, I'm going to be talking about this at the Ground Zero Lounge. There's something called the Institute for Human Continuity, which is a website that's out right now that if you look up, it looks really impressive, but it turns out to be a viral marketing website for the movie 2012 that'll be released in theaters in November.
Huh.
So, and that's another one of those disaster films that is put out by the same guys that gave us The Day After Tomorrow. So there you
and
go.
And again, as we're basically talking about what really is predictive programming on a number of different levels.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's the TV shows or the pilots or films that are coming out or that have come out or they're
right.
planning, whether it's Quarantine or Right at Your Door or The Day After Tomorrow or the upcoming remakes of Red Dawn
mm-hmm.
or Logan's Run.
Right.
On the one hand, you can look at it just from a almost a capitalistic economics point of view where it's they already own the rights to these movies, so let's remake it and getting an audience in the theaters like shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah, the messages, I mean, a lot of people say, well, it's just a movie or it's just a comic book, but always remember this. Comic books and movies, at first, were being used as subversive tracks to get people to think certain ways. That's why we had the Red Scare of the 1950s and the investigation of the American criminal activities. And that's why the comic book acts were changed. Mm-hmm. That's why they said, you know, you can't have this in a comic book because it promotes juvenile delinquency. They knew that comic books and they knew that movies were basically creating subversive thoughts. And don't tell me it doesn't continue, that Hollywood doesn't have an idea of what may be happening, mm-hmm. or they don't get an inkling, or that intelligence doesn't leak themselves into a script writing group. These things happen. Or not only that, but you have movies that are created, such as Pearl Harbor. It was out 3 months before 9/11 to remind people that, yes, America needs to pull together in times of disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially when we're attacked unprovoked. And that was kind of also interesting timing as well when that movie Pearl Harbor came out. And then we had 9/11 some three, 4 months later.
So now we see recently and last year, what was the biggest film of the year, if almost on its way to all time, was The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight, which, yes.
And now we have The Watchmen.
Yes.
Which seems to be treading the similar path. Now, even before we discuss some of what's in either of those films, we just recently had the case in along with all the other mass shootings, which mm-hmm. is something we're going to have to get into.
Right.
A guy who was actually military was gunned down in Virginia just the other day, dressed up like the Joker.
The Joker, yes. And there was also a Belgian daycare where a guy dressed as the Joker on Heath Ledger's death day, on the one-year anniversary of his death, walked in, stabbed, and shot a bunch of people at a daycare in Belgium. And what I talked about this. I did a show a long time ago called Hex Death, where I talked about how the Joker, the reason why Heath Ledger's Joker is so compelling is because he did not play a clown. What he played is he played the trickster. He played, and he wore what is known as death makeup. He didn't wear clown makeup. He wore the death colors, which are blacks and reds and whites, much like the death metal bands wear.
Well, and the difference from his portrayal as the other one, or at least previously the more famous one, the Jack Nicholson,
right.
Much more immaculate, well-dressed. He was high class and dapper and funny.
Right.
This new version is off, literally off his rocker.
Sure. Yeah, and not only that, but the words that he used, many of the words he used, like, you know, you know, people when people are in crisis, you watch, they'll eat each other. Mark my words. Words like that. Words like, you know, all you do is you take, you know, don't cut the head off, or don't start with the head. It makes things all fuzzy. And sometimes people just want to watch a city burn. You know, it's not about death and destruction and that. It's about just watching people suffer. And I think that we're going through that right now with the economic situation. It's not about money. It's about watching us suffer and being. The thing I'm really resenting right now is that people lick up the idea that we are guilty of everything from screwing up the planet to overspending, all this stuff. We were encouraged to do all this. 30 years ago, Jimmy Carter had said, hey, people, start recycling. Start having these solar panels on your house. Have some alternative fuels and alternative heating. What did we do? We encouraged the United States to start buying gas-guzzling cars again. We encouraged the United States to overextend their credit. We encouraged people to buy more homes and all this other stuff. And then what happens after mommy and daddy encourage us to start doing these things, they get out the belt and they start whipping us. Mm-hmm. And then they say, you're going to pay all this back now, and I'm not paying your dues anymore.
I've said a lot recently that, more specifically about the climate issue and fossil fuels and all of that, is that they basically, be it Dutch Royal Shell or what have you,
right.
They suppress the technologies.
Right.
We're in trouble because we're using the dirty stuff too much.
And not only that, but these petroleum companies, once they start implementing them, they'll be making money off these anyway because they own the rights to them. That's why this is happening. Global warming, and I always get into arguments with people, global warming is a scam, okay? And people say, oh, no, it's not. No, it's not. Look at the weather. Okay, look. Climate change is real. Global warming is a scam. Global warming is a political tool to get you to start spending money and feeling guilty, and it's also a cover for something called global sustainability. And what that includes is you dying for the planet, or basically you end up being I'm not a resource eater or a consumer by eliminating yourself so that those in power can have more to play with. And they will cull the population, and they won't think twice about it. Between wars, drugs, food supplies being cut off, the men with the guns will own the food and own the drugs. And they're making that so now. H.R. 875, take a look at that. Mm-hmm. And tell me that this isn't an attempt to starve us, pretty much.
And this is the bill. And that's the thing that we've seen once our fantastic new Democratic-led Congress gets in power. We've seen some of the more wicked bills whipping out in the last 6 weeks.
Sure, anything from thought crimes to not being able to grow your own food. Pretty soon, and I'm beginning to believe this too, I've been hearing this whole talk about Codex Alimentarius, this whole idea that they're going to take all of the supplements that you take for vitamins on down the line, they will classify them as foods or as regulated drug substances, and you will not be able to buy them or use them as alternatives. You will have to have a prescription for them, and if you don't have the insurance to cover them, you're going to pay outrageous prices for them, and these nutrients are not going to be available to you. So, you know, you render a population sick and tired and unable to live properly, and you're pretty much, vulnerable to whatever they tell you to do. This is the beast system, by the way. I mean, I've talked about 666. I did a whole show called Genome 666, and people were saying, it's an implant. You get an implant. That's the beast thing. I go, no. You know what the beast thing is? The beast thing is they take your blood, they biometrically trace you, they genetically place you in what is known as a predisposed category. Because they check your blood to see if you're a genetic defect, and if you are, Gattaca is here, New World Order is here.
Sounds very Brave New World.
It's Brave New World, it's Gattaca, it's all that. They put you in this situation, that's why Logan's Run is being remade. Mm-hmm. I mean, Carousel, get a clue. I mean, it's more about genetics and eliminating the old for the progression of the young. I mean, I was talking about eugenics directives, anything from denying you health care, to not feeding you properly, and also regulating how you breed, who you breed with. Mm-hmm. It's all about genetics and geneticism, and stem cells and all that other stuff.
So, Carousel in the film Logan's Run, and that basically gives you the idea that you actually have some control over this. That but if you play along, you might get a chance to come back again.
Sure.
Even though no, you just are obliterated.
Well, it's like the island. You know, they all sat there and they wondered, well, where does everybody go when they're called, when the number's called? Oh, I know, they get to go to this paradise. Oh, great. Turns out they go out and they get their organs taken from them because they're clones and they don't realize they are. And it's the same thing with us. We're stuck in this myopic view of what's happening. We can't see beyond our own 2 feet. We look beyond it. We try to explain it. And people think we're crazy. And you point to things like blackjack, and you point to things like Codex Alimentarius, and you point to things of what is known as, we know what is called predetermined or actually predictive programming, where, of course, Americans are going to respond because they've seen it before. They've seen it in a movie. The Joker. People dressed up as Jokers go out killing, getting gunned down. I mean,
or they won't respond because they've seen it before. Like,
sure.
I've
seen that before.
That
we saw New York
me.
Destroyed how many times in movies?
Mm-hmm.
From King Kong on down the line. And then, two buildings going in. What was the first thing the guy was asked? They asked him, so what did you think when you saw the two planes going into the buildings? He said, I thought I was watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a special effect in a movie.
That was what we said. I had actually that day a media studies course, and that was the thing we all said in there. Which,
right.
Of course, we forgot soon thereafter. It was like, that's right. We all thought it looked really fake.
Yeah.
But as we're talking about Logan's Run, and we're talking about what is essentially eugenics,
yeah,
that reminds me of, on the Ground Zero episode, Genome 666, the Project Purity, in mentioning, now her name escapes me, the octuplets lady.
I got her name wrong. I called her Natalia. Her name is Nadia Suleiman.
Suleiman.
I remember that now because I called her Natalia throughout the whole show. And I'm sitting going, all the people out there think I'm a real dork. And they don't understand. It's just quick preparing.
Now, Ground Zero Lounge, and we actually should mention this a little more.
Right.
And where the shows can be found in the videos and things like that. But in watching the shows now and basically being a follower of the Ground Zero Lounge and trying to promote it as best I can for you.
Right.
I had never seen the audience, and it's an audience participation show.
Sure.
I've never seen the audience so quickly, so loudly get involved in the show as when you brought up the octuplets lane.
I know. And what I asked my audience, and it's really funny how you can say to an audience, I'd like you to get up to the microphone, I'd like you to tell me how you feel about a woman who has given birth to 8 children, who has another 7 children she's dealing with, let me know, you know, how you feel about this. And they're just very quiet because, you know, they don't want anybody to hear what they have to say. And so I just said, all of a sudden, I said, how many people feel that this woman should be sterilized? And the audience just went nuts. They applauded loudly.
They did.
And I go, well, Hitler thought the same thing. You know, I think people don't understand that, you know, I don't think they understand the rich history America has in eugenics directives. Mm-hmm. I don't think they understand that Woodrow Wilson signed many things into law that were eugenics-based. I don't think they understand that some of the best eugenics books came out of the United States. And so I look over my fiance, she's here, Janine, who has a book that was published back before World War One that she has it. She read to me one night, and it just was, we just thought it was just scary how the book talked about certain ways, certain men to marry. You don't masturbate, you don't do any of these things because it goes against eugenics plans, and it was just a crazy you know, book. And but yeah, some of the best eugenics ideas and laws, Margaret Sanger, of course, Planned Parenthood in Oregon.
That's the thing. So you went right there.
Yeah.
I've told this a few times, I think, on the show about I work at a prominent grocery store here in Portland, Oregon.
Sure.
And all the time out front, as is epidemic all over Portland, there are people with clipboards asking you if you have a minute for the environment or for the children or for Greenpeace or for Planned Parenthood.
Sure.
So I, you know, usually it's easy because I'm at work. Once I say I'm on the clock, they instantly back off as if they've probably been told, stop bothering the employees.
Speaking Spanish works for me.
So the girl talking about Planned Parenthood, and I said, no, I don't have time. But I thought about it, and I thought, yes, I do have time to go ask her if she knows about eugenics.
Right.
Never heard the word, didn't know about it. Should I? And I got her to basically write it down on her spot. I was like, just go home and Google eugenics plus Endgame and maybe put that into YouTube or something and just check some of that out. Mm-hmm. So you've got folks who are doing their part, trying to do the good thing, as actually one of my managers said when I was telling him about it. He's like, man, why are you going to screw with everybody? She's trying to do her thing, and you got to come talking about eugenics.
Right.
But I think that's the way a lot of times that I work best with this kind of material. One, doing the radio show gets it out to a lot of people. But one-on-one seed planting, and again, at a grocery store, I love being able to say, hey, Fanta, you know that was the Nazi drink?
Yeah.
And they go home, and they'll check it out, and the next day or a couple of days later, they'll come back and go, man, I checked that out, and now you're
Bear Aspirin.
Right.
Hey, Bear Aspirin, the IG Farben company, you know, they were responsible for Zyklon B. They weren't even, they couldn't sell it in the United States during World War II during that time, and finally it just got good all of a sudden, we can sell it again. I think that gauging the groups, gauging the audience, gauging the people around you to find out what they know is important. And I think a lot of people, when you speak of these things, they think you're crazy. They, you know, but I was pointing out, like when I got in the big argument, if you caught the genome 666, I got in the big argument of abortion. I said, abortion, Roe v. Wade will never be overturned. Now, I did not clarify, though, that it could be overturned on a state-by-state basis. I'm sure Utah would love to overturn Roe v. Wade. These conservative areas would like to overturn Roe v. Wade. But I said, Roe v. Wade will not be overturned, and it's a political football. It's used unnecessarily because they can't overturn it because it is a eugenics directive to have abortion. It's one of those things that it eliminates certain parts of the population that we don't really want anyway. Or I'm not speaking about you and me. I'm speaking about the elite. Mm-hmm. The elite don't want the bottom feeders, and so if bottom feeders are going to go out, and what I'm talking about is I'm talking about minorities because they don't like minorities, and all those people are on the bandwagon about borders and all that other stuff. I mean, even though they say they let them into the country, they let them into the country because they're slaves. That's why they let them into the country. Mm-hmm. And you bitching about it is not going to change a damn thing because it's slave labor, and it keeps you from having to pay $20 for a tomato. Okay? Get a clue. It's the way the operation goes. People always get, you know, people always get riled up about their borders and sovereignty. Your sovereignty is bullshit.
That
will not exist. The North American Union is well on its way, and I just always get annoyed when I see these xenophobic bastards going off on some tangent that has nothing to do with reality. Abortion, borders, crap like that. It really doesn't matter because they've got it all planned anyway to have the slave labor come in. They've got it all planned anyway to remove those who are not complying. It's called sifting the, what is it, sifting the, what did Hitler call it? He called it sifting the something, sifting the substance or something, where you separate those who don't do what they're told and put them in camps And then you eventually tell them, hey, work hard and we'll kill you. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what this is now. We're living this now. It's just that you don't see the concentration camps. You don't see that you're living in a place with barbed wire and concrete blocks surrounding you because the barbed wire and the concrete block is inside of you. You are stuck. You can't move. You are being kept from moving. And you're being kept in your gated communities, and you're happy there, and you're watching your sports, and you're watching your, mm-hmm. you know, I swear to God, Katie Holmes' hairstyle was the big news on Yahoo yesterday.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I'm like, you know, can I please, you know, come out of this bubble and read something that has some sort of, you know, substance to it? And people, they lick it up. They love it. They
Absolutely.
Love this stuff.
So we see these issues like abortion or the borders or gay rights and things that they give us the football mm-hmm. and we play with it,
sure.
but we ain't in the game.
Right. And we're not really in the game. Think about this. So Barack Obama, the Obamasiah, decides to lift the ban on stem cell research.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and everyone's like going, and the Pope's going, and they're all going crazy. Well, okay, the reason why stem cell research ban was lifted was because it's part of the eugenics directive. You destroy the embryos, it eliminates more people coming onto this planet. You notice how they put in parentheses, yes, stem cell research, but what did he say? No cloning.
Obama says cloning dangerous and wrong. Now, reading
yeah.
from MediaMonarchy.com,
right.
from the Associated Press, President Barack Obama says human cloning is, quote, dangerous, profoundly wrong.
No, it's
and,
not.
And has no place in society.
No, it's not. Tell a twin that he's a genetic defect, because that's what twins are. They're clones.
And they're dangerous
and
profoundly
dangerous and
wrong.
Profoundly wrong. So if you're a twin, I'd like to tell you, you're dangerous and profoundly wrong, and you should off yourself. That's the whole point. People don't understand that cloning is just like twinning. And that's exactly what it is, except we're doing it outside the womb, mm-hmm. and then we're inserting it back into the womb. The baby has to be born, it has to grow a normal life, and yes, it will have a soul. The problem we have with cloning is, what does it do? It puts more people on the planet. Mm-hmm. And what do they want to do? The elite want to see you dead.
They want less.
They want less of you. And they want less people on this planet. They don't want to, you know, make more. They want you to do less. So stem cell research is cool. And here's another thing that's strange about stem cell research. They're going to use it for experimental medical care, something that will not be covered when Barack Obama proposes his universal health care plans. Experimental health care will not be done. You will have to get an insurance company to pay for that experimental mm-hmm. health care. And then the insurance company will have to decide whether or not you have a pre-existing
condition.
Exactly, a pre-existing condition that they won't cover. So once again, you know, we cannot have what they have in England because the insurance companies will cry. So what they'll do is they'll give you a little bit of it. It's like I was talking about the situation with the Oregon health care plan and Medicaid. There were two people in Portland that had cancer, and they asked Oregon Health, they asked the health plan, because we have universal health care sort of in the city. They asked the Oregon health plan, would you pay for my treatments for my cancer? And what do they do? No, we will pay for your assisted suicide, but we won't pay for your cancer treatment, because assisted suicide is legal in Portland, mm-hmm. and it's going to be legal in Oregon, and it's going to be legal in Washington State. In fact, it already is, I believe. So, of course they'll pay for that, because what they're going to do is going to weigh the treatment as opposed to the years of productivity that you're going to be giving if you're getting this treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're like 65 and you get cancer and you're on a universal health care plan, they're going to say to you, well, look, here's the deal. 65, we're going to give you 6 months of chemo. If the chemo doesn't take, then we're just going to say, look, we can't afford it anymore, and you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
That denied health care is part of a eugenics directive.
We've seen a lot recently, too, as the think tanks start to look at basically their panic plan for what they're goading us into doing
mm-hmm.
here eventually, sooner
mm-hmm.
or later.
Mm-hmm.
And when they look at who's to be saved, well, we're probably not going to be able to save the sick and elderly. They
no.
basically already put that on paper saying,
yeah.
well, you're probably screwed, Grandma.
And you've got these food taintings going on. Who does it affect? It affects the very young, and it affects the elderly, and those with immune systems mm-hmm. that are compromised. And who did they eliminate in the eugenics wars or the World War II? They eliminated the elderly, the sick and infirm, the ones who gave a stress on society or in the environment or the economics. Global sustainability is a reality. Project Blackjack, this whole Operation Blackjack mm-hmm. thing. What's interesting about Blackjack is that We have six cities in the North American continent, plus London, where millions of people are wiped out because of nukes. Okay? These are organized, these nuclear bombs organized in six different North American cities and in London. Now, how much money would it take for a terrorist organization to put that many bombs in major cities? It would take a lot of the money we're hearing about that are supposed to go into these bailout plans.
Yep.
All of a sudden, we have to go and bail out. The economy's going to hell. We have to bail out all these people with these trillions of dollars. You know, always remember what happened prior to 9/11. The economy, the stock market was going bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it fell. There was a drop. And then all of a sudden, boom, we have this recovery, and then bam, we get hit with a terrorist attack. Now we're really bad, and they're really pouring more money into this. And I always seem to think that whenever money is poured into a program where you're not seeing any benefit from it, such as the space program, we can get into NASA in a minute, the space program gets trillions of dollars, and what does it do for you? Absolutely nothing. Why? Because those trillions of dollars are going into the military-industrial complex. The other little bit of money goes into these stupid little science fair projects that people shoot up into the shuttles.
Mm-hmm.
So
for the show.
For the show. Yeah, it's good for the show. Mars is good for the show, mm-hmm. even though we see things that look like there's life on that planet. They deny there's life on that planet. So what's the point of going out into an outer space, spending all this money for science? Science is not given anything in the last 40 years that we've had a space program. Not really. I mean, so well, Mars may have life on it. Maybe not. There may be artifacts on the moon. Maybe not. You know, maybe we went to the moon. Maybe not. I mean, why 50 years to go back to the moon after we've been there? And why the moon? Why don't we go to Mars? Because the space program is an illusion for the military-industrial complex. It's just one more way of funneling money into war efforts. And same with these bailouts. I'm sure that some of this money is going into war chests somewhere
mm-hmm.
to develop more terrorist attacks and more problems for this country. And I think that people need to wake up and understand that that's what's happening.
So we've mentioned NASA, and we've seen now again, it's been put on paper, that the space program is being put into bed with the military.
Of course.
NASA and the DOD and Obama are basically all getting into bed together.
Always has been.
But now it's announced, just in the same way that they're talking about, oh, well, we're gonna shift away from Iraq, and we're gonna pull troops, and yada yada, and we're actually, you know, we're cutting money from all these things. I've noticed, again, it's always kind of the trickery, that they haven't really cut the money, they just moved it as a part of now the regular budget.
$17 trillion goes into the space program every year. $17 trillion.
And what could that do for...
It's doing absolutely nothing. Yeah. I mean, we're doing absolutely nothing in space. If we were to get reports that there were aliens out here, I would shut my mouth. There have been so many speculative things coming out of Mars, from the methane that's being produced from things that die on a planet that's relatively dead. I don't understand how we don't just come right out and say that Gilbert Levin was right back in 1976. Gilbert Levin, I've interviewed, I've talked with him. He's not a bitter man. He's an amazing man, amazing scientist. The Viking program produced life. He said so, and now NASA has to review it now because they're thinking, well, maybe Gilbert Levin was... Of course Gilbert Levin was right.
Hmm.
And not only that, but I just get so annoyed when I see what comes out of NASA and how all these mathletes are like get big boners and chubs when they see these pictures coming out of Mars. And then you see things like statues that look like statues or planks of wood or water or snow, and immediately we're going, well, that would mean amino acids, that would mean water, that would mean life, that would mean... No, it doesn't mean that at all. Why can't we just admit that we're not alone? Or why can't we just admit that there are things out there to explore other than a dead rock like the moon? Why don't we put money, this trillions of dollars, into protecting us from NEOs, near-Earth objects, for those of you that are following along at home? We had close brushes with asteroids. We had one 40,000 miles away. That's less than halfway between the Earth and the Moon. That's a really close shave. I mean, 40,000 miles brushed us by that much. People are seeing UFOs in the sky. They're not alien all the time. Don't get me wrong. But by God, there's something going on out in space. And I had talked about this. Obama had met with NASA several times about this. And then what happens after he's meeting with NASA? We have two satellites collide. Do you know how impossible that is? The odds of that happening are very low. It's like taking two bottles with messages in them and having them collide in the middle of the ocean. And then Russia comes forward and said that was done on purpose. We deny it. And now they're reporting that the space station had to be evacuated because of debris hitting the station. What is going on out in space that they won't tell us about?
So,
the alien threat, probably. Who knows?
And we're seeing this. We're seeing, again, and that's, I think, what's so fascinating and probably why we do what we do, pour over the news and data mine all of this.
Sure.
Because it is as if a lot of this is being played out, that it's following a script. And as we watch along, as we follow along at home, if you pay more attention, you'll start to notice memes and ideas and the signs and genealogy of things
right.
that are coming.
It's by design, James. It's all by design. You can tell that it's all by design. These topics are being brought up by design. The same as when Hitler used Nostradamus to prove the stormtroopers were going to be successful. They use the Bible, they use Nostradamus, hell, they may even use the Quran. They use whatever means necessary to convince you that you're living in end times. 2012, everybody's saying, 2012 is no big deal, it's going to be like Y2K. No, it's not. You know why it's not like Y2K? Because 2012 is a meme.
It's an idea.
It's not
a turning over of the clock.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily a physical...
No, it's a spiritual thing. And when it gets you where you live, inside you, see, I always say the apocalypse is the revealing, but the Armageddon is what happens inside of you. And if you're having a spiritual Armageddon, or if you're having a loss of love, or a loss of feeling like you're alone, do you realize that they just put out a study saying that the United States is the loneliest country in the world? People don't want to get to know each other. And they say, well, it's because of the Internet. No. Think about this. What we put into the Internet is who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Internet is making us isolationists, maybe we were isolationists to begin with. Maybe we are the lonely ones, mm-hmm. the selfish ones. Divorce rates are high. Portland, the most unhappiest city in the world.
I saw that recently.
Why suicidal? People not wanting to get together? Hell, I remember when I moved here, I said, you know, it's so hard to have a relationship in this town because no one talks to each other. No one wants to get together and do things. And they say, well, we all get together and get drunk. Well, that's not productive.
Yeah.
Everybody can go get drunk, and I drink alone sometimes. It's a matter of socializing and getting to know people and accepting people despite their flaws. In America, we are so shallow these days. If somebody has just like one flaw, we will exploit it. You look at the news, you know, Katie Holmes' hairstyle. You know, she cuts her hair. It's the rave. You know, Jennifer Aniston gives one terse, you know, cursory look at, you know,
Angelina
at the Oscars. And immediately we're like going, oh, she's good. I'm thinking, come on, people. I think what we talk about is far more interesting.
That's the thing.
And far more entertaining and compelling. And yet we're forced into having to do this on our own independently because the big money doesn't want you to really know what is happening
mm-hmm.
behind the scenes.
So before we get into anything else, let's set the table as we were talking about NASA and Obama and what we see and the signs and the memes and the growing sort of coming space war, cyber war.
Right.
I love this, and I don't think I've played this before, but even if I have, it's worth playing again. Let's hear a few words from Uncle Ronnie.
In our obsession with antagonisms of the moment, we often forget how much unites all the members of humanity. Perhaps we need some outside universal threat to make us recognize this common bond. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
I couldn't help at one point in my discussions privately with General Secretary Gorbachev, when you stop to think we're all God's children wherever we may live in the world, and I couldn't help but say to him just how easy his task and mine might be in these meetings that we held if suddenly there was a threat to this world from some other species from another planet outside in the universe. We forget all of the local differences that we have between our countries, and we would find out once and for all that we really are all human beings here on this earth together.
So there you go. He said that, what was it, three or four times.
He did.
Said that, and it wasn't some senile declaration. It was a reality for him, and I think that he knew. You understand that. You know, Ronald Reagan was the president that was there during E.T., the extraterrestrial, Star Wars. All those things mm-hmm. were a part of our lives.
He's an actor.
And he's an actor. But just take a look at what he had to say. And you also take a look at, I don't know if you ever read the book, The Report on Iron Mountain.
No, I'm familiar with it.
You got to read it. It's a great book. It was pretty much, a lot of people think it's a hoax, but it was a report that was developed during the time of Kennedy, because Kennedy had come forward and said, we're going to have a time of world peace. How is the military going to be utilized? And so they thought they would come up with these ideas to keep the military in operation, and they came up with things like an economic threat, governmental change. They talked about an ecological threat that we could not tame, that they could create, like global warming, mm-hmm. global sustainability. And then they also said, in our final last resort to get people to, I guess you could say, cave under the control of the military industrial complex, is to create the alien threat, or to manufacture an arrival, if you will, mm-hmm. of aliens, or a manufacture an arrival, if not aliens are out there, or the return of a deity of some kind, like maybe Jesus Christ or Muhammad or, mm-hmm. or something. And one of the things I always brought up was I wrote a number of articles called the Gog and Magog Protocols. And I came up with that because one of the things that really, really bothers me, and no one has ever really posed this question to any authority, and they should, we are a Christian nation, am I correct?
We are.
We are Protestant more than anything else, mm-hmm. even though there are probably more Muslims and Jews now in the United States than there are Christians. But we consider ourselves a Christian country.
That's what we were founded on.
Yeah, we were founded on Christian beliefs and Christianity. So here's the biggest joke of all. A country that is based on liberty, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, based on Christian values and beliefs. Christian values and beliefs also include the end of the world. Okay, they include the return of Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, where every knee shall bow and every head shall bow to the new Savior who returns when he promised he would return, and he would return to save his people and to redeem them again and to take them up into heaven. If this is the case, then somewhere hidden, where I cannot find it, is a protocol that needs to be addressed to pretty much welcome the return of a deity, or welcome the return of angels, gods, what have you. I have not found it. I don't know where it is. I have never heard anybody mention that there's a protocol to welcome this deity back, or this god back. So I have to believe. Yeah, I have to believe that it's bullshit. I have to believe that this country does not believe in having protocols for the return of a deity or a god or aliens or what have you. So what a great way to have as a secret weapon to unite people for a cause, to create, as I think it was Baudrillard said, to create their own simulacrum, which is so convincing, and this is called the Uncanny Valley, where you can create a god or a holographic image or something that you can project into the sky and have people follow it. And I think that that's easily done, and there are a lot of, like I said, there's something called the Uncanny Valley, where they're able now to create an artificial god or an artificial life or an artificial form that they can even claim is the return of Jesus Christ or Muhammad or Allah or whoever.
I don't know if we've discussed this before. I know I've mentioned it on the show probably many times. I grew up with a conservative Christian upbringing.
Yeah, so
went to a Baptist church. It was basically a fire and brimstone, or at least those are the parts that I most remember.
Sure.
Now, it wasn't a preacher banging on the pulpit scaring the hell out of me.
Right.
It was a little more subtle than that. But from a very early age, I knew that I had to accept Jesus Christ into my heart as my personal Savior,
sure.
to forgive my sins, and that is the abracadabra that will get me into heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So even as a little kid, I remember waking up in the middle of the night asking my parents if I did it right.
Mm-hmm.
Did I do it correctly?
Right.
And so that speaks in a way just to as you start to think about it when you're a little bit older, you're like, that seems a little silly.
70 million people in the United States believe in a virgin birth. They believe in the second coming of Jesus Christ. How many of our representatives who are Christian believe in the second coming of Jesus Christ? How many, including Barack Obama, who's allegedly a Christian,
mm-hmm.
Bush, who's allegedly a Christian.
Although, he said, don't take the Bible literally.
Yeah, don't take the Bible literally. All these Christian leaders that we allegedly have who dance around a Bohemian Grove every spring, tell me something. If I was to take you aside, Barack Obama, and look you in the eye, and I'd say to you, Brock, do you have a protocol, a way to welcome back to this earth a God, whether it be Jesus Christ, Elohim, Allah, or whomever? Do you have a protocol to welcome that God in? And even if we find out that our gods are aliens or extraterrestrials, which God is an extraterrestrial, he doesn't live here, he lives somewhere out in heaven, that's why we pray to the heavens. If an extraterrestrial returns and they turn out to be our and we turn out to be their progeny, how do
in
we
their image.
Yeah, how do we welcome them in? And what is the protocol and procedure? What do you do to avoid a situation like we read about in Childhood's End? You know, how do we avoid the situation where, you know, and a lot of what Arthur Clarke wrote in Childhood's End is happening. You know, the reconditioning of what aliens are, the reconditioning of what they look like. And you know, 50, 60 years of this, of conditioning people to prepare for aliens, even children now. You cannot watch it. I mean, I watch a lot of children's programming because my fiance has a two-year-old. Even inserted in children's programming are aliens. You cannot avoid it. You see aliens. In fact, the Teletubbies are aliens, for crying out loud.
And they even look like what I was just about to say. They look like Fred Flintstones. Who was his alien they added on later?
Kazoo. Yeah, I mean, you see that the Teletubbies are even aliens. And I don't know if they're going to be fuzzy and say, la la. I don't know if they're going to be that. But I most certainly think that if you're conditioning children as little as two, one, to see that there are beings out there, there's got to be a reason for it. And it's, once again, we're going back to full circle with predictive programming. You give years and years and years of this predictive programming, from science fiction books to science fiction movies to aliens landing to even the most realistic with Independence Day and all these other movies, these realistic alien films. When you, like in Signs, where you, the one of the best scenes, people didn't like that movie. I kind of did because I liked the way they handled that. Was that Argentinian-Brazilian birthday party where the alien walks past the camera? It was the most beautiful thing.
Is that the Mel Gibson?
Yeah.
Shyamalan film and Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah.
And, okay.
Yeah.
I did see that.
Poor Joaquin got a beard and started, you know,
rapping,
passing
apparently
out at rap concerts.
And apparently he was booed.
He was going to beat up some guy, too. They're saying that was a publicity stunt, but I hope it is. It's just sad to see this guy fall apart. But
Phoenix.
It's another Phoenix that will rise, I guess. Hopefully, if he doesn't end up like his brother. But what, you know, there we go again talking about Hollywood.
But that's the thing. See, you can't avoid it because the names and the ideas are—it's just so replete.
I know.
Basically, it all tells the story in a way of our lives and our world.
Sure, and they're remaking stories, and they do these films. People say, "Why are you remaking these films again?" Like they're going to remake Freddy Krueger, and they remake Last House on the Left. I sit there and I say to myself, "Why are they doing this?" And I think it's because they want to continue to push these memes in us. They want, and the catastrophic model is the meme they want to push. We, in our ancestry, in our cell structure, our ancestors witnessed the end of the world. And that's where, you know, when you pick up a Bible and you read in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, what you're really reading is you're reading the chapter after the destruction of the earth. It was without form, without void, and darkness fell upon the waters and all this other stuff. What you're reading is you're reading the catastrophe that was witnessed by the ancients. They had no way of explaining what had happened. All they can explain is we rebuilt and everything. And of course, it was in Genesis 6, there was intervention with aliens. If you want to talk about the Garden of Eden, intervention with serpentine creatures. The Bible is chock full of werewolves, vampires, and aliens, if you just look carefully.
And it's almost so then, and I never really thought about that in Genesis, that perhaps it's the end of the beginning, not the beginning of the end.
Yeah, it's the end of the beginning. It's, it was, again, let there be light. And we go through these cycles. It's a revolution. Back to 2012 again. 2012 is the end of a revolution. It's the end of a cycle. And that's why 2012 is so important, because people say, oh, it's nothing. But it's not harmonic convergence. It's the end of a cycle and the beginning of a new cycle. I did a speech at ESOZone where I told people that there will be a lot of abrupt changes going on between now and 2012. It's going to be little by little things are going to happen. I firmly believe that there will be some sort of event that will take place in 2012 where we will have to change the way we look at time, the way we look at calendars, the way we look at it, because they were, it's going to have to reset the whole system. So we go from BC to AD to whatever happens after 2012. For some reason, 2012 is going to be that cycle, whether it be a new government, a new way of looking at God, a new way of looking at our place in the universe. I mean, hell, it may be the time where we're actually going to find out if, for certain, that there is an alien threat from outside this world. Not a threat necessarily, but an alien presence, or a presence that is extraterrestrial that either is looking out for our well-being or wants to destroy us. And so that's the thing we have to evaluate. And then once you start going into space, and once we start doing, you know, space wars or have to go from planet to planet, time will not matter anymore because you calculate it in space-time. You don't calculate it in 60 seconds or a day or 24 hours or nothing like that.
So as we were talking about religion and that it ties in a way, or that it's seemed to, and again, as growing up with a Christian background, I never conflated gods and extraterrestrials at all.
Sure.
But now we're seeing that, and so now even more of the idea is in my head. I want to play one other thing, and it's from a longer, it's about a 15-minute video from a guy named Frank Lordy, who runs revelationsmedia.com. It's the first video, I think, that he has made, and he has now made three of them. Three out of three. The first one is Project Bluebeam, False Rapture, and the New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
He's also made a shorter film about Washington Mutual, about the assassination of Washington Mutual. He's also working on the Mindbender G.I. Joe documentary that basically shows within the cartoon in the mid-80s, Cobra lays out this financial plan, and he has clips up where you literally have Cobra Commander appearing on the television saying, because of the ineptness of your financial leaders, we have a new economic situation for you, we're giving you the new currency. I thought it was edited when I first heard it, and it's literally from that show. I think he's pushed it to the back burner. He's going to time it out to hit when the G.I. Joe film comes out.
It's back with predictive programming again. It's awesome.
So, and the Washington Mutual thing, again, having it been my bank, is also really fascinating. And again, as we're seeing the new financial world order, and it's, and J.P. Morgan, and the same gangsters and banksters that have been pillaging us for nigh on 100 or so years.
Exactly.
So let's play a quick clip from Frank Lordy's first short documentary, and this touches on exactly what we're talking about. It's the idea of aliens or raptures or angels or demons.
The rapture is one of the most controversial topics in all of theology. Some Christians believe in it, all atheists mock it, and the New World Order may very well attempt to fake it. What would discourage Christians more than seeing New Agers, Buddhists, cult leaders, and corrupt con artist Christians raptured while the Bible-believing faithful are, in essence, left behind? Why wouldn't the New World Order attempt to unite all the world's religions behind one deity by including them all in such an apocalyptic event? Surprisingly, the U.S. government actually admits to thinking about the use of this technology, though it denies it's followed through with such implementation. In an article entitled Bees on the Battlefield and Other U.S. Military Experiments, published by the British news agency The Guardian on June 18, 2007, it discusses strange government projects, and I quote, "Then there's the prophet hologram, the projection of the image of an ancient god over an enemy capital, whose public communications have been seized and used against it in a massive psychological operation." An Israeli cybernetics expert named Yitzhak Hayutman has even gone as far as to lobby the Arab world to allow him to project a holographic temple above the Dome of the Rock in an effort to summon whichever savior should take notice of it and actually show up. But does it even matter? Does this technology even exist? Or is it just crazy conspiracy theory? Let's take a look at the Army Research Lab, Delphi, Maryland's progress report from November 96 through August 97. Accession number ADA-333-8490. The topic? A 3D holographic display using strontium barium 90. Its abstract states, an innovative technique for generating a three-dimensional holographic display using strontium-barium niobate is discussed. The resultant image is a hologram that can be viewed in real time over a wide perspective or field of view. The holographic image is free from system-induced aberrations and has a uniform high quality over the entire field of view. Interesting. We've seen the chemtrails, and there's a lot of speculation about what they're being used for. Weather control and mind control are at the top of the list. As you'll see in a second, chemtrails have been directly linked to barium, which is one of the main components of the Army's 3D holography display.
Now, Frank Lordy goes on in that clip, Project Bluebeam, fake rapture, false rapture in the New World Order, to talk about perhaps using these ideas for torture. And so you don't waterboard a guy, you just psyop him, and you think Allah spoke to him last night, and next day he comes up and spills
sure.
it all.
I'm a terrorist to the bone.
I'm a terrorist, and that's let's not go there. Just
how many terrorists do you know go, goodness gracious me, I'm
a terrorist to the bone.
I can't hear Apu saying that on The Simpsons. Who makes this stuff up? I'm sure they sat there after being tortured and go, I'm a terrorist to the bone.
To the bone.
They don't say that.
They've become, rapidly Americanized.
Oh, yeah, let's Americanize these terrorists to say, use American phrases that sound like they were made back in 1956.
So, War of the Worlds was originally conceived, or at least the Orson Welles 1938 PSYOP, was a Princeton University scheme.
Yes.
It's been documented in books. They even wrote their sort of after-action report, the name escapes me, The Day of Terror.
And Welles had the wherewithal to say, I'm sick and tired of people believing everything that comes out of that damn box. I'm ready to do this. People are gullible. I mean, he was interviewed, and he said, it was a big experiment. And he said that one of the reasons why he agreed to do it was because he felt that people were just dumbed down by the radio. That they believed everything that came out of that little box, and he wanted to see some people sweat.
So the very sort of simple question and a very complex set of ideas, could they pull this off?
But it would have to be done. In fact, like I was saying, and we were talking off mic with Janine here. She was saying that if the deity was walked down the street, that he'd be shoved down with morphine and told to go to jail and be held captive. So you can't do it that way. You can't have a real deity walking the streets. So you've got to, I think, you project a big bright light in the sky or something that's unexplainable. In fact, there's something on YouTube that I saw where there was
in
a
Russia.
Cross in Russia that was in the sky that people thought it was some sort of a psyop move.
Or heart. Or blue beam.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that what would happen, and this is how it would work, because I don't know if you remember Newark, New Jersey. There was a UFO incident that happened, I think, 2 weeks before 9/11. It was on the New Jersey Turnpike. People actually got out of their cars, and they looked up, and they saw what appeared to be something similar to the Phoenix Lights. And they had said something to the effect that they thought they were seeing angels. They thought that angels were in the sky. Same thing happened in Latvia, too. They saw these beams of light coming out of the sky. They thought they were angels. And so my whole thing would be, create something that looks ethereal in the sky, whether it be just some sort of a flash of light or a big beam or something that's beautiful. Have people see it, and then we inject into their brains, something like active denial, where it's a reverse of that, where people wake up with the same feeling that, they've all experienced something spiritual or paranormal, and a few people have felt it. Some people don't feel it because it's hard. I mean, it's like me, by not drinking Obama Kool-Aid. I never did. And a lot of people have. I think it's similar to, drinking the Obama Kool-Aid. If you can drink the Kool-Aid that tells you that, yes, that thing in the sky was God, then they've won, or alien, or whatever, they've won.
I guess, and this has been the thing that I am 50-50 on, is the very technology that would be used to make it the most convincing thing ever could also be the technology that we would use to debunk it.
Sure. I always tell people, because I dabble in the paranormal, and I do a lot of conspiracy theory at the Ground Zero Lounge, but the paranormal is what I am most interested in, because people equate their lives with paranormal experiences, whether they say they do or whether they don't or don't know what they do. I mean, everything is magnetic, everything is electric, sensory. And so my thing is that I think that in order to create a paranormal experience that would be convincing is you have to keep it as mundane as possible. You know, something simple. I mean, you know, we fill in the blanks. You know, we see something and then immediately we fill in the blanks whether or not it's a ghost or a man in black or an alien. I think that a lot of the paranormal and a lot of paranormal experiences are based primarily on how your brain accepts it. And so if you make it mundane enough and just off a little bit, people will say, oh, yeah. Because if it's too slick, people won't buy it. If it's kind of rough around the edges but still convincing, it's, I mean, because, I mean, you've been in an accident. People have been in accidents or they've witnessed accidents. They're not like Hollywood. They're not perfect. They don't have the explosions and the guns and the, you know, whatever. In fact, I remember when I worked I worked at CNN. I was doing CNN News. I was working at an AM station, and what had happened is the shock and awe thing happened in Iraq. And I tell this story, and I'm sure people will deny it, but I know this for a fact, that I know some people who worked at CNN who told me that they were told that the explosions that were being heard in the shock and awe video were not loud enough, so they enhanced them so they had more impact. They had to put sound effects of the bombs going off. So they went and they got CDs, Sound Ideas CDs, and they overdubbed the bombs with sound effect bombs so it would be more effective because the bombs weren't loud enough. They could not, the mics couldn't pick them up, and so it wasn't effective. It was just watching, you know, explosions and no bombs.
Seeing lights.
Exactly. So, you know, people like to have this enhanced experience. They have a template that they base all of their paranormal experiences on. If it doesn't fit that template, it's not real. Like aliens, too. People, I've talked with people who've had alien abductions, and each alien abduction has been different. Yet all we get is the same template. If they took me up into a spaceship, they probed my anus, and then they put me back down, or they impregnated me, and they were all three-fingered aliens with big almond-shaped eyes.
Uh-huh.
But I've talked to people who've been abducted by orange aliens, blue aliens. I've talked with people who have experienced seeing humans with aliens. And so everybody's experience is different because the mind fills in the blanks that it cannot comprehend. I was having this discussion the other day, and I said, you know, I'd like to think that the reason why we somehow see aliens as big almond-eyed baby-looking creatures is because the truth is they're more hideous than we think, and so our minds only project that image on.
It's very easy. It's almost cute.
Yeah, it's cute. So
that's the sort of the communion, right. Whitley Strieber look.
Yeah, so it takes away the ability to look at something that's not anthropomorphic.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to anthropomorphize our dogs. We see them as human beings. We see our cats as human beings. Mm-hmm. They're freaking animals. So you see your car. I mean, how many times have we seen a car? Come on, girl. We talk to anthropomorphize. Not only that, but we see eyes and the lights. And then, of course, we have that wonderful Pixar movie Cars, where cars are anthropomorphic and they look like human beings. So we tend to anthropomorphize a lot of things, and so we anthropomorphize aliens, I'm sure. We anthropomorphize our gods, even though our gods may have not looked anything like what we perceive them to be, like Jesus Christ being a guy with a mullet who basically looks like he can change your transmission, but he wears terry cloth robes and all these people are worshipping him. Yeah, exactly, and sandals. I mean, what if he doesn't look anything like that? You know, what if the depiction is completely wrong? We got it all wrong. We just throw that image on there to say that's a guy. If it doesn't appear that way, people won't accept it. But I think the brain somehow, if you see a bright light in the sky, a perfect example of this is when the Cash Landrum case, where these two women were in Texas and they saw this big diamond in the sky. It was a UFO. And the one woman got out of the car thinking it was the second coming of Jesus Christ. She actually said, I got out of the car and I held my hands up as if, you know, because she was a born-again Christian.
Take me, Lord.
Take me, Lord. I'm ready to go to your rapture. And she got burned. Radiation burns. And it was a UFO. And she's been trying to, she's dead now. Betty Cash is dead now. But she'd been trying to sue the government because they found out it was a UFO. So if you see something, it's like they say, something that to a primitive culture that's huge and tremendous like this can be indistinguishable from magic. And if you have the technology, you can create anything. You can create the simulacra. And then once that simulacra is created, if it's that convincing, it is reality, and you've seen it.
And I think anymore, we do see that. So you mentioned Baudrillard and simulacra and simulacrum. It's basically a copy of a copy of a copy.
Exactly.
And that's everything we do with Facebook or internet or any of that. It's all of, you know, this is not a pipe. This is not a hat.
Right.
It's a painting of a pipe.
I know people who have cell phones that have the sound of an old-fashioned telephone ringing.
And
on
I
my
enjoy
cell phone.
Those.
That is digitally produced. It's not a real bell, but it sounds like a real bell.
And it feels comforting.
And it feels comforting more than hearing, you know, a song play. I think that, you know, and so when you hear that phone, you go, who's got an old phone? It's not an old phone, it's my cell phone, sorry. It was digitally produced. Everything now is a digital memory. It's not a real memory. You can ask people, do you remember the 50s? And people who lived it say, yes, I remember the 50s. But kids and people like you and I in this generation, the only thing that we can remember is the 50s specials we saw on television with Dick Clark or Chubby Checker, Fats Domino. We remember the greased back hair and the...
Or even the, you know, Back to the Future and things that are set, you know, set in the 50s. So, no, I don't remember the 50s, but I think I have a good idea of what they're like.
Yeah, we have an idea what World War II is like from Valkyrie and the downfall. And, you know, Hitler was a monster, but yet we can't figure out how a monster could convince all these Germans to follow him. Maybe because he wasn't always a monster. Maybe he was a lot like George W. Bush, where every once in a while you kind of grin and go, he's a stupid guy, but he's our stupid guy.
He's our stupid guy, and we're in, you know, so much trouble here, you know, financially, then this seems like the best option.
Well, and that's another thing, too. One of the things about Barack Obama, and it's really difficult for me because I get up at the Ground Zero Lounge, and I don't really disparage Barack Obama all that much because the reason why I don't is because Barack Obama is a good guy, or he appears to
and
be a good
guy. And that's the
thing,
flipping through the magazines, and like you mentioned, Katie Holmes on Yahoo, and the other times when I pick up People or Us or something on Break at Work, flipping through and saw him, you know, catching a Chicago Bulls game and drinking a beer, he looked like a fucking cool guy.
Philip K. Dick wrote a book called In the Image of Yancey, and it's exactly that. Philip K. Dick said, in the future, wars could be raging, poverty could be at your doorstep, monsters could be lapping at your toes, but they put the guy on TV who's your president, who sits back in a nice sweater with a dog and a nice easy chair with a fireplace, telling you that everything's okay, and everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
He is the image of Yancey. He is that man who, no matter what happens, he gives us a pep talk, and even though we're all standing in the bread lines, we're all going, yeah!
So that's the interesting thing, is that seemingly right now, it is we're being told the two different things. The one, that everything's okay. You know, yeah, we're having little hiccups, a little rough road, but we're working on it, and everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that seems to be the complete paranoia and fear-mongering, and we see it. And you even mentioned animals just a few minutes ago, and that's something that I want to go into. And that's 1 week ago on episode 114 here, I briefly mentioned that the Thursday before that, that two kids had been arrested in Atlanta. There had been a gun found, and when they went to one of their homes, they, I think, found, you know, a cache of ammo and all these things.
Sure.
I only briefly mentioned it, but I did, after that, mention the caveat, oh, that's right, we are entering the prime time for mass shooters and school shootings.
Aries times.
Sunday, we had the Illinois church shooting.
Yes.
Which came out, the guy, and now it looks like that the case, that the sort of defense is that he has Lyme disease.
The Twinkie defense.
That he has Lyme disease, and it was, you know, mental deterioration.
Sure.
But then we found out, too, that he had marked down in his day planner that Sunday was death day.
Right.
So that sounds fairly well planned and organized for someone with a deteriorating mental condition.
Sure.
Then on Tuesday, we had the Alabama shooting. 10 dead in Alabama.
Right.
Wednesday, 16 dead in Germany.
Right.
We have animals attacking, which I believe was all kind of kick-started, or at least, again, the idea and the memes.
Sure.
But the monkey attack, the medicated monkey, this monkey that was on antidepressants, which we, of course, find out, as we knew that we would, that Tim Kretschmer, the German shooter, was coming off of antidepressants, had been in some sort of psychological situation, and loved to play first-person shooter games. So basically, I guess what I'm getting at is the idea now that we see, and I even brought along with me, I thought maybe we'd look at it, but probably not have time, a book called The Copycat Effect by Lauren Coleman.
Right.
And he is not into necessarily the conspiracy of it, but when he lays it all out, you can't help but think that those are too many coincidences. Are we seeing people really lose their shit? Are we seeing basically our canaries in the coal mine flip out?
We're seeing doppelganger suspects. And I did a show. In fact, it was funny. I was reviewing a show that I did at the Ground Zero Lounge 2 years ago, back when Hillary, I think it was like 2 years ago, it was about a year ago because I was recovering from cancer. Less than a year ago, actually. Hillary Clinton's office being attacked. And they had one suspect in custody, but then it was the wrong suspect.
That's right.
They had two
right.
suspects. And so what I think is going on is that, yes, we have what is known as doppelganger. This is a doppelganger test run. They find these people. And I remember there was a situation in Trolley Square, Utah. I reported this one, too, where this guy, he was from some foreign country. I think it was, like, the Ukraine. And his father had said that he was taken into some sort of a group where they handed him a gun and they told him, practice, 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 and then you're going to go on the real thing. And they used video games to train him. And then his father had said that then he went into the Trolley Square and started shooting people and shoot 9 people. I always see that the number of the shooting always hovers around 9 or 10 people for some odd reason. I've seen that pattern. Also, I think that one of the shootings happened on the 9th. Is that true? March 9th? And so that would be the 9th day of the month, and then you add 2 and 9, you get 11, so that's a 9-11.
Well, the Germany shooting was on the 11th.
The
church shooting was the 8th.
The 9th was the Alabama one. So we have the 8th, 9th, 10, I mean, 3 consecutive that were all within dates of each other. And you know, you also need to take into consideration there was a shooting that I investigated in Utah as well where some Vietnamese woman walked into KSL television and started shooting. And she said that the reason why she did it was because she was getting messages sent to her. And she heard these messages in her head and she couldn't get them out. And they found out that the microwave or the antenna that was
the transmitter
that was sending a cell phone. They were used for cell phone, was off. The frequency was off by just a bit, and that could cause people to hear voices in their head, extremely low frequencies.
And that's something interesting that I just recently heard Lynn Horowitz talk about on Red Ice Radio, the idea that these sound waves and frequencies, that we've basically been attuned to a distorted, dissonant frequency.
Right.
But that if we shifted just a little bit, it would be into a more love frequency.
Well, here's something to think about. Not very many people think about this, and it's true. I've talked to Lynn Horowitz many times. I think he's the one that taught me this. Bicameral mind. The body, when we were primitive, had a bicameral mind. The mind told the body to move hand. Move hand. Okay. Move arm. Run from danger. The mind would tell the body, and it would hear it in an audible voice. Move, 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 move. A lot of people don't know that. The primitive man actually could hear his brain tell him to blink, to open his mouth, to have sex, to eat, to do those things. Now, we don't have the bicameral mind anymore, but we do have extremely low frequencies that tell us to move our arms. The brain sends an extremely low frequency throughout the system of the nervous system to tell the arms to move, the fingers to move, the legs to move, to eat, to, you know, these types of things, to digest food. It's all one big low frequency that's being sent to us by the brain. Extremely low frequencies can also be sent through us. I mean, we have frequencies and waves going through us all the time with radio and microwaves and all these electronic frequencies. But if somebody can take an extremely low frequency and they can send it to you to tell you to do this, and you're compelled to do this, that can be done as well. And you can be exposed to it and not even know that you're doing it because some extreme low frequency is controlling you.
Which still makes me think then of the blue beam ideas and the sort of military technologies that we heard in the clip, and that's beaming sound into your head,
which was
blasted out from an ad in Times Square.
What's the frequency, Kenneth? Remember that story?
Yes.
Okay. There's a song.
The R.E.M. song
that was the frequency, Kenneth, and the guy from CBS.
It was Dan Rather, who is, of course, always seemingly tied up in whether it's the Kennedy assassination or George Bush or the Iraq War.
Right. Dan Rather was the first guy to report the Kennedy assassination, but he was also one of the strangest characters in the history of news. Anything from saying courage to coraje to, you know, wearing pink sweaters to being late on the set.
Or to being walked out on by Poppy Bush.
Exactly. Being beat up by some guy who's saying, what's the frequency of Kenneth? What's the frequency, Kenneth? That gentleman that, or I wouldn't say gentleman, but beat him up, also killed somebody on an NBC lot, and he was put in jail. truth be known, he was hearing voices when that was going on, and they come to find out that, I guess, the Russians were doing low-frequency broadcasts from their submarines in New York, and that he was hearing those broadcasts, and that's why he was asking what the frequency Kenneth was, because he was being subjected to these low-frequency broadcasts, and he was already crazy, and it made him more crazy. It set him off even more. So, you know, we don't know. I mean, we've got naval operations going on right now off the coast, which is posing a threat to the whales.
The whales. And
the fish.
And that seems to be who actually brought a lot of that story to light, is actually environmental movements saying, hey, you know, this is what's killing a lot of the sea life.
And that's low frequency, high frequency sonars and communications. What do you think the HAARP project's for? It's to lower the aurora borealis so they can communicate with submarines that are below. So far, they can't get the broadcast to them. That's why HAARP exists. And when you cook the ionosphere like that, it causes weather problems. It causes problems with health, and people sometimes hear voices. It's the way it goes.
So as we see all these things happening, I've just now pulled out this flyer that a couple of days ago, heading to work, I see posted up. And there was a couple of them. And initially, I was on my way hurrying up to catch the bus. And I just was going to stop and read it for a second, and then I realized, oh, my God, I have to grab this. Bold yellow paper, big, bold letters. The CIA used medical sabotage to inject me with RFID computer microchips. And it goes on to tell the story about how this woman was led unsuspectingly to be implanted with RFID chips by the CIA, and she's being tortured because she knew information about money laundering and things. My problem sometimes with this, as I'm sort of putting you on the spot, and Clyde's basically looking at this flyer right now, all of these things are absolutely true. The unfortunate thing is sometimes when they're put together on a flyer like this, poorly written, it has the opposite effect. Look at it and go, you're fucking nuts.
Well, what is the purpose of this, though? That's the thing. We've got to find out what the motivation is for this person to put
this
out.
I have not yet contacted them. There is a phone number and there is an email. Now, when
you
want
to interview this person.
When I Googled their name, I only, of course, once you finally fine-tune it and get the quotes around it to what exactly you're looking for, the only thing I could find was some guy in Portland 1 year ago posted on his MySpace page, hey, I found this crazy flyer, and he basically reproduces the text.
Sure. I would interview her and find, I mean, you don't have to do it on the air, do a pre-interview, find out where she's coming from, and see if there's any truth to it. If you remember, Timothy McVeigh said that he was injected with a microchip,
mm-hmm.
and that he did what he was told.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, people sometimes get the chip.
And that's the thing, is that it is totally real, in that, you know, when I got to work and I showed a couple people the flyer, that's like, you know, they poo-poo it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help but sort of side with them in a way, and that's some of the difficulties.
Well, of course, I mean,
in the conspiracy world.
Yeah, of course, you think, oh, God, what is the purpose of this? Why is she sending this out? But, I mean, that's the whole thing, is you take her aside and you say, why are you doing this? What is the point? And why is it then you don't go to somebody and get this removed?
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, and if they start going off on something that you know is crazy, because, you know, there's some of the things about, and in my experiences in the interviews that I've had, some of the things that you tend to run into is you run into people that have had experiences, but they embellish experiences because they think that you're not going to believe them unless they embellish them. I personally like the people who are the most mundane. I like the people who say, well, this happened to me. Like, I interviewed a woman once who claimed to be, she was abducted by aliens, and she was afraid to tell me the most important part of her alien abduction was that one of the aliens looked like a huge penguin. And I said to her, I said, why were you afraid to tell me that? She said, I didn't think you'd believe me. And I said, I think that's more interesting than, you know, and I've heard, I said, I think that's more interesting that you were to say that one of the aliens looked like a huge penguin because, you know, how else, you know, that would make it even more interesting. And another
that
thing,
doesn't, yeah, it's not the type of thing that yeah, someone would make up.
Yeah, it is not something you'd make up, so I believe your story. You know, well, I was abducted by aliens, but there was one alien that looked like a huge penguin. Okay, that's interesting, mm-hmm. and that says something about the alien experience, whatever it was. You either filled in the blanks with that, or there really was something that looked like a huge penguin there. You know, I've heard, you know, all kinds of stories that people have told, and some of the most outrageous ones, I think I believe in, because why would they make it up? Unless they're crazy, but most of these people don't seem crazy. Most of these people seem like they're on the level, and they've had some experience that they don't understand, whether it be a hallucinated a hallucinatory trip that they had from taking a drug, or whether it be they've been mind controlled, or whether it be they really have had the experience of being abducted by aliens, or have been in some experience where they've seen something they just don't understand. That happens to people. It's a part of life. They call it paranormal, but it's really normal. And trying to figure out why it happens or where it comes from is where the mystery lies.
So now it seems like we either have folks in the populace who are completely oblivious and are fine to, you know, just keep going to Blazers games and Katie Holmes and all that shit.
Yeah.
But then, like we've just discussed, all these mass shootings and sprees and even animals attacking, you know, the medicated monkey more or less ripping someone's face off. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, elephants running amok, I believe, in India. We have a monkey who's been forced to climb up trees and retrieve coconuts, threw a coconut at its owner's head and killed him.
Right.
So we see almost the canaries in the coal mines freaking
sure.
out. We discussed a little bit ago about we're all getting up in arms, perhaps quite literally, for our sovereignty and for all these rights that were granted to us, supposedly, and I believe I've gone over in the show before, and you've probably discussed this before, that, you know, we didn't need wealthy Freemason landowning males to say that I have inalienable human rights. Those are mine without you granting them.
Right.
But the fact that then they grant it gives us the thought that, oh, well, then it's something they can take away. So now we're going to fight for it. Mm-hmm. We seemed that they're kind of shaking up the cage.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're either going to argue about First Amendment or sovereignty or borders and all these different things. What do you see coming down the pike in the next several months?
What do I see coming down the pike in the next several months? I see Americans completely betrayed by their own inability to understand how their government works. I think you're going to see more and more people, you know, desperate in a way that they're going to be desperate for the ability to survive. And there's going to be more bank robberies, more shootings. There's going to be high crime rates.
I feel like I'm already seeing that in Portland.
Oh, you're seeing it already, but it's going to be a lot worse than that. And I think that, yes, we will definitely see a time where there will be a civil war in this country. But, see, people have not lived through civil wars. I have. I lived in one in Buenos Aires. And civil wars are kind of weird. You don't know they're happening. You just know they're there. You know that there's an era of civil war. Lucy Fuerza marches down the street one day, and shootings take place, and people are being ripped out of their homes at 3 in the morning and taken by truck out in the middle of nowhere and beaten up. The police decide to... Some police officers decide to get the signal, and they rebel against the military, and they start shooting at the military, and the military starts shooting at the police forces. That's how civil wars happen. It's not about whether or not, you know, some guy... you know, gets beaten up like the Rodney King thing by police, although the riots like that happened. But it does begin, civil wars begin where groups of people with guns decide that they're going to make the laws and they're going to make the rules. When your economy falls apart, the laws don't apply anymore. They really don't because, you know, if you have no money, you can't pay your taxes. If you have no money, you can't participate in the decisions being made by your government. If you can't eat, you're going to find ways to eat, even if it means stealing.
Mm-hmm.
Gas, you've heard the story about how people have been beaten up waiting in gas lines. It's going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because people in the United States have not thought out to plan and not thought out to set aside food, set aside money. They won't allow you to buy drugs in bulk. You can do it online, but they frown on it. But the truth is you need these things to have in storage, and, you know, doctors are just, you know, everything's by the book. There's no customer service anymore. Americans are going to have to change the way they look at things. Prices are going to have to go down, and it's not happening. I want to just shake realtors I talk with. They're still selling homes in Portland for $500,000 when people in Detroit are buying them for $20,000 to $60,000, and they can't even afford that because they're not working. Here, you know, our lifestyle is changing, and yet we still have these gloating realtors selling homes for $500,000. It's not going to fly.
No.
Grow up and realize that we live in times where it's time to adjust again. People don't have the money to, basically be delinquent on their credit cards. They can't do that. Loans are worthless. Banks are worthless. It's all going to boil down to what is the worth of the soul, what is the worth of the human being, and whether or not you know your neighbor. And it's really funny because they just put out a study saying that we are the most loneliest country in the world. No one reaches out to anybody. They don't reach out for help. They don't reach out for anything else because they're so used to being isolated and not in a position to do this. Americans are going to become more isolated. They're going to become more spoon-fed, and they're going to believe whatever comes down handed to them from the big networks. And it's just going to be the same thing. The only thing is there's going to be a big smile on it now. It's kind of like Canada. You know, Canada is fascism light. They have, you know, they can have the police kick in their door, but they do it with a smile on
their
face.
It's all very pretty.
Yeah.
And they enjoy a great reputation in the world.
Right. They do. I just think that, you know, when you turn on the television set, you don't have any I Dream of Genies to watch. You don't have any Hogan's Heroes to watch or Gilligan's Island to watch. Nothing that's just silly entertainment to make you smile or laugh. If everything has to do with death, CSI, police chases, hospitals, lawyers, you know you're living in a police state because it's all about death, about law, and about the results of health care. Mm-hmm. It's all about
death and taxes.
Yeah. And what Homeland Security reality shows.
I haven't seen any of that.
Surviving on desert islands. I mean, these are things that are just so dreadful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought there's not really that many shows out there that are like Bewitched or I Dream of Jeannie, the time when TV had its heyday. Now we are stuck with, you know, The View and discussion shows. And and that's what kind of shows you're fed when you're in a police state. I remember when I was in Argentina, they had something there called Toca y Canto. And what it was is that you would go out, you would buy a magazine, and you would learn chords on a guitar. And then, if you were good enough, you could go be on television, and then you were judged by four people. And you know what your prize was? A canary in a cage, and $500. And to them, that was enough to get by. Here, it's like a record contract and all the adoration and the ridicule you get from Simon.
Uh-huh.
But it's the same programming. It's because reality programming and all that's cheaper to do, and it just basically feeds the public with all kinds of bull.
See, and that's what's so funny. It's almost a win-win as far as the big business goes. So it's like, not only economically is it cheaper, like we discussed, remaking movies they already own the rights to,
right,
and doing reality television where they don't have to pay high-priced actors. It serves two purposes for them. It saves them money, and it involves us. It's the word that I love called participation.
Participation.
Where you participate in your own manipulation.
Oh, that's good.
I'm not sure what you call it.
Are you going to put that and get that online, too, participation?
I already need to.
It's up there with Food World Order.
I've got that one.
Which I ripped off of my show.
My farm of websites. there is a participation.com. There is foodworldorder.com.
Yeah, okay.
So that actually maybe leads us to, as we're now here in the last 20 minutes, I want to talk about where Ground Zero is going and has been.
Oh,
and
my God.
Is
it's like another 2 hours.
Because I noticed in the last several weeks there were points where, hey, I can't get the new show. Where is it?
Yes, and I've been leaning on you to get those new shows out there. Well, it's a long story. We are, you know, of course, you know, I'm recovering from cancer, and I'm healthy. I've kicked it. I went and had a nice talk with my doctors, and things look good, and I'm feeling better. I'm losing weight. I'm doing all kinds of great things, and I'm improving my life, which a lot of people were worried that I was getting ready to give it up, which I was. And so I neglected a lot of things. In Ground Zero, I neglected, but I still did my shows, even walking out of the hospital. I walked up there with stitches in my stomach doing shows. But I did it because that's all I had. I didn't have anything else. I don't have anything in material wealth. I don't have any of those things. And so I remember when I got out of the hospital, I said to myself, you know, I'm going to be 45. I just turned 45 on the 22nd of February. I'm going to be 45, and I want to change my life. I want things to be, you know, I don't want to give up anymore. I want to, you know, because I was sick for a good long time. I don't want to give up anymore. I want to rebuild. I want to get a car. I want to get, you know, I want to fall in love and have a good relationship and have a family and all those things I didn't do that I neglected because I wasn't feeling well. And Ground Zero, of course, I never intended it to be a career, ever. It was just a sideline. I was more or less a top 40 FM jock, and I did radio for a long time. Ground Zero was just something I did on the weekends, but then it got bigger and bigger and bigger and became a name and a brand and syndicated and moved to Portland and syndicated and making appearances at UFO shows and Ezo Zone and becoming a personality who talks about the strange and the 14 and all this other stuff. And so when I met up with my fiance, we were talking, and I said, you know, doing a radio show would make a lot of money, but we're in a bad economy. And I said, but I've been known to fly into the teeth of the storm before and come out smelling like a rose. So with a lot of motivational speaking and the fact that she loves me, she's been really behind me 100%. Janine has been behind me 100%, you know, negotiating with people, talking with people, getting to know people and finding out just if there's anything out there to get the show off the ground again, because it's been there, weighted down by a bunch of things, health and all this other stuff. So I hooked up with IdeoCast about a year ago. Dan Olemaker and Delana have been really supportive with the shows and putting them up there. IdeoCast was sold, and what had happened is the show then was removed from IdeoCast. However, I have it on good authority that Olemaker wants to move everything to the Ground Zero server, and we're going to put some things up there. There's actually a man by the name of R.F. Burns that runs something called Ground Zero Total Recall, which are old shows from 2005 that you can hear in real time on Saturday nights. And they're really evergreen, because I was listening to them the other day. I'm thinking, my God, I talked about this back then. It's happening now. So if you want to hear, you know, just how, I guess you could say, I don't know if it's insightful or prognosticating or whatever it is, you can listen to those shows on groundzerototalrecall.com. But as far as Ground Zero is concerned, we are currently looking for investors, currently looking for people who want to invest money in a show that has a good brand name that is unique. I mean, I'm not like any other conspiracy theorist or reporter out there. I have a background in news and journalism, so I do have reputation to uphold, although a lot of people feel that I've already tainted it by some of my opinions. But we're rebuilding. We're restructuring. I proposed the show to a radio station here in Portland. They gave me the okay, and then they turned around and went back on their deal. When I went back to the investors, I said to them, well, here we go. And they said, no, we want you to be on Monday through Friday. We want you to do a Monday through Friday gig. Well, there have been some opportunities that have arose with the letting go of several major talk show hosts. And I've already negotiated with, I've been negotiating with an old friend of mine, hopefully, to get the show back on the air again. He says it's a go, but then he's had a change in his itinerary now, he's moved to another station, and so he doesn't make that decision. However, the guy that does make the decision, I do know. And so it's a matter of we're moving slowly but surely. Ground Zero always returns. It's like, even though I've tried to put it out of my life, it always returns. And it's always been around in one shape or another for 15 years. It's going to be around probably to my dying day, do Ground Zero. It's the way it's been.
When I noticed that almost steadily that there are new uploads of older shows from Dante's going up to Google Video.
Sure.
So I know actually, folks, and this is what I do, if you just Google Video, you know, quotes around Ground Zero Lounge and subscribe to the feed of that result, you get
the updates
when it happens.
I've been getting all kinds of emails from people saying, you know, we miss the shows, where can we see them? And Bill Coons, who's from England, comes here. He and his wife Fern come here. And they videotape the shows, and then they go back to England and videotape stuff over there, and then come back, and they're going to be back in July. So I'm not going to have any video of the Ground Zero Lounge for at least that long a period of time. So anybody who wants to come out and videotape the lounges and put them out on Google, we want you to come out too, Southwest 3rd and Burnside. I've got a great show that I've got planned about Blackjack coming up this Monday, and I would really love to have it put online in video form, because I think that there are a lot of insights that I've seen that I'm talking about. And not only that, but since it's happening, one of the bombs goes off here in Portland, according to the Blackjack scenario, I've actually scaled out the area where they say they go off. And believe me, they've done their homework. They know exactly. I mean, it just gave me the creeps to think that white vans parked in a motor pool could actually have a bomb in them, and that they knew this. And if it's from England, they really, or someone from here gave them the information. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's a well thought out plan.
Huh.
But, Ground Zero is going to return, and I'm determined to do it, mainly because of the fact that I think Ground Zero is more relevant than it's ever been. I think that what I'm talking about is more relevant, and people like you and Alex Ansary and others who have been supporters of the show, I think that it's time that we all ought to work together, too. And, you keep your show, Alex keeps his show, but what we do is we work under the umbrella of trying to get it out in some commercial form, and I think that once I have that commercial the commercial pulpit to speak from, I think that we're all going to work out, and it's all going to work out in the end. We're all going to sit and benefit from it. And I think that we need to think about benefiting, not only financially, but in a way by which that we can shape things and not and be an alternative to somebody like Alex Jones or, hell, Coast to Coast AM, which a lot of people, if I say George Norrie, they go, yes, we need something better than George Norrie out there. And I love you, George, but you know what? Your grandpa, and I don't think you're hip enough to understand what's really going on. You still live back in the times of great knee highs and you know, and things of that nature, and I think that's a little bit too much.
So we pretty much have come full circle and have brought it back to Oregon, where I'm sure that perhaps when we leave here in just the next little bit, we're going to see the mobile command unit parked outside. And something else that I did have posted up on the site is just basically under sort of Oregon oddities, we have, you know, the bank bombs and embezzlement and troops.
Right.
So the latest that I know about the bank bombing that happened in December.
Sure.
Is that they're working basically on federal charges, and they're now painting the Turnage boys, Bruce and his son, as their anti-government.
Sure.
So they're going to be, again, tied into this sort of, what I've said, you know, long pre-election, that if and when the Democrat comes in, we're going to shift back into the sort of Clinton-era homegrown enemies of the Timothy McVeighs and the Wacos and the Columbines and your militias and... We're going to see, whichever we already have just seen, that folks like Ron Paul and Chuck Baldwin are terrorists, according to, you know, Minnesota.
MK Agricultura 1. There's Agricultura 2. It's going to be coming out probably in the next couple of days. The video is going to be probably the last one you're going to see. It's the part 2 to my food investigation. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I pointed out, as far as food terrorism is concerned, in MK Agricultura, that the new issue of Homeland Security terror threats. No longer are they focusing on Muslim terrorists. That's all done.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. They're focusing now on right-wing extremists, anti-government extremists, and also extremists that would bomb abortion clinics and places like that.
And so that's all the 90s stuff again.
They're going after right-wing extremists. Basically.
So speaking of bombs, we had the guy who's, and I believe this was also December, whose wife killed him. In Maine, he was working on a dirty bomb, and he was he had parts of a dirty bomb, and had apparently gotten, you know, plutonium from some American company on the internet.
Yeah,
but he was a rabid Obama hater.
Yes,
and
he was
Nazi sympathizer and had dirty bomb parts.
It's funny how, you know, all the trigger words are there: Nazi sympathizer, dirty bomb parts. And once again, that's why blackjack creeps me out. Because it's so, I mean, these nukes, these dirty nukes, are placed in barrels and put in vans and parked in heavy places of commerce in the middle of cities. Portland, Oregon's one of them. And you start seeing these patterns. You're hearing Obama saying Islamist extremists from England are coming after us. You hear that Homeland Security now is issued, that right-wing extremism is out there, Nazi sympathizers. You see a lot of people, a lot of anti-Semitic websites going up everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing also, you know, people who are being, I guess you could say, ostracized for saying the Holocaust never happened, that Argentine cardinal or whatever it was.
The Pope apologizing.
The Pope apologizing profusely. And what we're getting at here is they're trying to create a sense of clash of civilization. I even point out in my next show, I talk about the Muhammad cartoons again. And one of the things that people don't know is the Muhammad cartoons that were released in that Danish newspaper, they were actually released 4 months earlier. And nobody gave a damn. They were released in the Danish newspaper, and everybody went up in arms. And the reason why was because it's not because of the cartoons. It was because what was going on in Britain at the time, where they were showing the videos of these Iranian boys getting the crap kicked out of by British soldiers. It enraged people so much because not only they were feeling like their entire world was caving in on them, and the imams of Denmark were causing trouble and getting people all worked up and having people go out and commit acts of terror, killing nuns and killing priests. And so it's all a matter of whether or not you hit the vein or you hit the nerve at the right amount of time. And we're at a time right now where we don't need seeding propaganda, which will create predictive programming and people to shoot up schools, dress up as the Joker, go out and make dirty bombs and cause all these problems, because that's why I don't understand why, if this is a viral marketing tool, why don't they tell us this so that we can move on and say, oh, don't worry about it. But instead, it comes off as guerrilla fear-mongering, comes off as viral fear-mongering, and it will spread to copycat type of stuff or doppelganger type of programming where, sure, I'll shoot this, we'll have another group shoot this, and you have them in a rash of things. Like you said, it's that time of the year where that stuff happens. Mm-hmm. We call it the time of bloodshed or the time of Aries, where for some reason that's where all the blood happens, is between March and May. And it's going to get a lot.
The 13th, 313, and significant dates and things cluster around each other. We're now, what, 2 days away from the Ides of March,
yeah.
Which, rolling down Broadway just the other day, I look up, Snickers apparently has put up new billboards all over the city. Right. They have a billboard up on Broadway that says, Eat Too, Brute.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
It's like,
always remember what Ides of March really means. It means Rise of Mars. Beware the rise of Mars. That's what Ides of March is. Beware the rise of Mars, which Mars, of course, is Aries. Beware the power of Mars, the bringer of war and bloodshed and attacks on agriculture. That is what it means. I don't know if you knew that.
There you have it, my friends. That pretty much puts the period on it. I don't know what else actually to say at this point. Because I think we've almost hit just about everything.
I find this, we did cover everything, I think. I think we basically have solved all the problems in the world, and I think that's okay.
There were part there, and that's what's so, I think, fascinating about all this, is that there were things that I wanted to hit, and you went there without me saying, okay, then I want to talk about this or that or the animals. Because, again, I feel like a lot of this is a script.
Sure.
And whether that script is the Bible or the Quran or the report from Iron Mountain or a hoax or not.
It writes itself.
It writes itself.
It does.
And so much, I think, of what we try and do is look at it. I wonder some, you know, if I'm some kind of, you know, obsessed, you know, John Nash, beautiful mind, looking for
you are.
Some...
I am too.
You know, some letters and schemes that will present itself. But no, I don't really believe that.
New movie coming out called Knowing. With, was it Nicolas Cage? It's about that very thing we do. Numbers are patterns, symbols are patterns, and they predicted all the future disasters. It's a really interesting film.
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, it's called Knowing, and it's about, I think it was like 1959, they put in a time capsule in a school, and they decide after so many years to unearth it, and everybody gets a little piece of 1959, except Nicolas Cage's little girl gets a piece of paper with numbers and symbols on it. Come to find out that all the numbers and symbols are pretty much a code for all the disasters that happened between 1959 and 2009.
So, Kennedy to 9/11.
Kennedy to 9/11 to whatever's coming next. And, of course, they're trying to prevent it again. And,
and
I don't know, it's kind of like a ripoff of the Bible code.
Well, and I was about to say, that seems to now be Nicolas Cage's whole M.O.
Oh, yeah.
Doing National Treasure.
National Treasure. What was that other one that he did where he could see it happen before it happened? Kind of a remote viewing type of show.
Oh, I'm not sure.
He's really into those shows now.
He
He's still doing those movies. I mean, you know, and Jim Carrey does the number 23. So, I mean, there's something else going on. I don't know. It seems that either someone's ripping us off and making a hell of a lot of money out of it, or everybody else is feeling it too.
And that's what's so fascinating is who, you know, art imitating life, imitating politics.
Sure.
Who saw it on the television show, or was their CIA plant saying, you know what would make a really good show is a sort of... phony terrorist hijack and crashing into the Trade Center. That sounds like a great idea for a pilot episode of the X-Files spin.
Always remember the Obama campaign was taken right out of the West Wing.
That's right.
And
David Axelrod was a consultant. Like,
yes, he was. And David Axelrod was Obama's consultant as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was taken right out of the West Wing with, what is it, Soros was his name? I don't know his name. The guy that played was Jimmy Smith.
Oh, Santos.
Santos. Santos was the guy who was not an African American, but he was a Latino American
and
won the presidency.
And it was all kind of, it was all there.
Yes, it was. It's all there. Rewatch that whole season
of
The West Wing,
the
and you've got the,
Obama
campaign right there.
It's all predictive programming, but again, who is pulling whose chain? Clyde, thanks so much for coming back to MediaMonarchy.com. I really appreciate it. And again, you know, we didn't have a pre-interview. We basically had just said, hey, 13th, be there. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
Yeah, I'm here.
And we both can pretty much hit the ground running. And like I said, he led to things that I wanted to discuss. And again, it's all right there.
You bet.
So hopefully we will continue and build on a collaboration like we've kind of discussed between Media Monarchy and Ground Zero Lounge.
Monday
and
night,
8
o'clock at Southwest 3rd and Burnside, 3 blocks from the Ground Zero site where they're going to drop the bomb on Operation Blackjack. Just keep that in mind.
According
kind of
to
thought.
The London Telegraph.
Exactly.
Thanks again, man.
You
I appreciate
bet.
It.
You bet.
Well, my friends, we've reached the end of episode 115 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's March 13th, 2009, Friday the 13th, 313. Commission Exhibit 313 in the Warren Commission is, of course, the headshot in the Zapruder film. But we won't get into any of that right now. I want to briefly mention, of course, again, thanks to the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network and KBFR, Boulder Free Radio, as well as Free Radio Olympia, as well as the Rock Creek Free Press and Freeman Fly. And we're moving. This is the last Media Monarchy show in our little ramshackle space here in downtown Portland, Oregon. I have a hard time thinking I'm going to miss this space. It's a little rough, but I think our new digs are going to be quite fantastic in a building called Active Space in southeast Portland. So next week will be the brand new space and a brand new spring. And we'll see, as the rise of Aries and the Ides of March all kind of swirl around, let's quickly look at some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. That's right, kids. It's time for your favorite part of the show. First, we have the Answer, that's A-N-S-E-R, Information Technology Division out of Centerville, Virginia. They were reading about how FEMA has, of course, suspended the top-off terror drill operations. And SAIC, Science Applications International, had to drop out, of course, because of conflict of interest. They're also heavily involved in the Army's future combat systems and all the robotics. Center on Budget and Policy Priorities out of Washington, D.C. were reading several months ago about the story Dutch royals caught revising their own Wikipedia entries. We had the U.S. Department of Transportation, which, interestingly enough, gets the IP address of uscg.mil. Out of Washington, D.C., they Googled USCG Captain O'Brien NYPD Ray Kelly. Someone at the Social Security Administration is a new fan of MediaMonarchy.com. They've been visiting quite frequently, like our friends at the Drug Enforcement Administration. The Genzyme Corporation, G-E-N-Z-Y-M-E, out of Hudson, Massachusetts, they Googled Keys, Stop Obama or U.S. Will Cease to Exist. That's, of course, Alan Keys. We went over that last week, joining the chorus of those wondering if we've been had. The CIA, but not the one that usually visits. This time it's the Culinary Institute of America out of Hyde Park, New York. They were reading, again, actually about a couple years ago, about DHS strikes a deal with New York on driver's license. The aforementioned SAIC, Science Applications International, were reading my 311 News Purge. That's where I just posted up a lot of headlines on March 11th. And again, what's interesting from the hits from a lot of these more curious sites is they're not hitting a link to land on the site. What StatCounter basically says is no referring link, which basically means they have it bookmarked. Loudoun County Department of Information Technology out of Spookville, Virginia. They're reading about Canada to compensate atomic soldiers with a pathetic pittance. Someone at the CBS Corporation in New York City again Googled Media Monarchy. Halliburton Company out of Houston, Texas Googled Richard Hack, KBR, and I wasn't sure exactly what that's about. Fort Leavenworth, baby. They were reading, we must throw the money changers out of the temple, and I posted that up last September when we were beginning our descent into the new financial world order. The government of the District of Columbia visited the site, and finally, Florida International University out of Miami. They were reading about Obamasiah, the Jersey Girls, Kissinger, and Carter, and that was, of course, the reading about the fabled meeting of some of the 9/11 victims' family members, which included Beverly Eckert, who was dead 7 days later in the Flight 3407 crash. The other thing interesting to mention about Florida International University is we covered them last week when they were hosting the, I forget the name of their sort of symposium, but it was staffed and filled with a bunch of CFR guys, and that's where one of the guys from the Council on Foreign Relations mentioned a think tank report that talked about a military coup in 2012. So there you go, and there it is. My friends, I thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. And again, like we were talking about, the sense of collaboration. I can only do this if you keep getting in contact with me and keep spreading the word and handing the show out. And I'm glad, you know, the show gets to people on Facebook who will then message me later and say, man, you've really gone down this conspiracy hole. And yet you then couldn't continue the conversation because you had to go play video games. That's some of our fundamental problems here that we're going to address and will continue to address on MediaMonarchy.com. It's March 13th, 2009, episode 115. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. Like my man Webster Griffin tarply says, get ready, or, oh no, get active. I almost messed it up because now I'm thinking about blackjack and being radioactive in Portland, that I fucked up my closing line. My friends, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.